Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining me. I'm Hillary Ramo, your host tonight, right here on Achieve Radio. Thanks for being here. Tonight I have a special guest. I'm hoping and very excited to talk to him. We're going to be talking about symbols, one of my favorite discussions, all kinds of hidden meanings and more and lots of good stuff. Chad Stumach joins me. He is an author and esoteric researcher. His investigations range from searching out the secrets of ancient civilizations and their hidden archaeology to probing the present for answers in regards to UFOs, Stargate, symbolism, spirituality, and humanity's greater potentials. So I hope you'll sit back and take a seat and join us, and you can send us your questions. And if you'd like to call in, we are live tonight. If you'd like to talk to myself and Chad, we'd be happy to. If you have any questions relating to the show topics or anything else for that matter, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world, and I just want you to know that we're open to discussing it, and perhaps Chad can offer some of his insights into the greater symbolism of some of the things happening in the world. We're having some extreme weather come across my area tonight, tornado warnings, all kinds of flash flood stuff. So hopefully we'll be able to ride the wave and we'll make it through the hour. So welcome, Chad.
Thank you, Hillary. Really appreciate the opportunity to be on tonight.
Well, you know, I've been wanting to talk to you for a while. I have been following your stuff on Facebook for some time. I know we tried to schedule a show or two along the way over the last few months, and now we're finally here and we're able to do it. And I think I know why, because one of the things that you posted recently had to do with a very special place that I will be making a pilgrimage to next year with Yesparu, Earth Wisdom, Maria Yesparu, and the elders that I work with will be traveling there next year as part of a pilgrimage. And you just happened to start talking about the Serpent Mound in Ohio, and I was very excited. In fact, you even posted a great picture of one of these fabulous coins, and I actually copied you and went out and got it because I was really excited about that. So I think timing plays an important role. You know, we just had the summer solstice. You have been having some interesting adventures that you've been sharing publicly. But before we get into that, why don't you share with our listeners, you know, a little bit more about yourself, how you started this, and where your journey really began?
Well, it actually began right around when I turned 30 back in 2005. I had, out of nowhere, a couple of UFO experiences. And up until that point, I, you know, had no interest in anything like we're talking about today. But after having those couple experiences, it's one of those things that, you know, you just gotta know what you saw. And long story short, that kind of pushed me into explorer mode, and I started researching UFOs, and I became a UFO investigator for a little while. And that kind of led me into researching the starry ancestors and ancient sacred landscapes and the mythologies and legends that surrounded them. And that led me to a friend and investigative mythologist, William Henry, who talked a lot about this stuff, but also incorporated the nearby cities and the parks in the cities. Well, I started really becoming interested in that because I was living in Detroit and I happened to have one of these parks right a mile from my house. And it just blew me away once I started to decode the symbolism in this park, and that in itself just put me on the road. I, you know, from that point on, I've been going city to city and different sacred landscapes and just trying to look at some of the ancient symbolism as well as the modern symbolism that's starting to emerge.
Well, I find it interesting that UFOs started you on that path. I've spoken to many other people who seem to have that same similar experience, at least, where, you know, they have some kind of unidentified flying object experience, whatever it may be, and it just opens up their awareness, their consciousness, and they begin to see the world a little differently, or a lot differently, actually, and they move into a different space where they're able to actually, what I like to call it, is kind of hitchhiking the cosmic flow. You know, you kind of hook up to it, and there you are, and you're going like a river, and you know, you can either just ride it and watch where it takes you, or you can fight it and find a place to hang on. It's really a fascinating thing. And speaking of William Henry, he will be on the show July 11th. He'll be here live for those of you. Yeah, so you might want to come back, because after our show tonight, we may talk about something, and synchronistically something might pop up in getting ready for him to come on. So it's wonderful that you two have such a good connection. So Chad, you know, so now that you have found yourself kind of wandering and intentionally walking through this grand path of symbolism and sites and seeing the modern places that you're, you know, you're going to and finding all these connections, do you feel that, you know, there's kind of this one foot in the modern world, one foot in the ancient world, where if you go and you, you know, you make a pilgrimage to the great, you know, the pyramids in Giza, or you go to Machu Picchu in Peru, or you go to the city park where they have these wonderful things. Are we looking at kind of a continuation of this sacred symbolism, do you think? Or is it that the modern day, you know, grand architect designers put these things into effect for other purposes? Or what are we looking at? Are we looking at a modern day kind of setup that holds energy and power for these places? Or is it just a coincidence that they happen to have these?
Well, see, as many as I've looked at now, it's definitely way beyond coincidence. And I like the way you put it, a continuation of the ancient symbolism, because that's kind of how I'm starting to see it. Now, kind of what my research is now revolving around is, like I said, I go to these ancient sacred landscapes, say, for instance, the Serpent Mound, and I look at all the symbolism that whoever built it, the ancient culture built it, they incorporated in these mounds. And lots of times, right nearby these mounds, in some cities, right on top of where the mounds used to be, where the urban centers have been built, and some of these modern parks, there's certain parks that are showing up that contain the exact same symbolism as the ancient mound sites. I mean, right down to aligning to the same stars. For instance, the Serpent Mound in Cincinnati, the nearby city, there's literally a park. It's a serpent park, and it's identical to the Serpent Mound, and all through the park has corresponding symbolism. And this is happening city to city. In Detroit, where there was ancient mounds, now the parks emerged and all the monuments have been aligned to Orion as well as the Giza pyramids. And this just keeps happening. And what I'm starting to feel is whoever built these ancient mounds, I feel like they were probably tapping into some sort of cosmic energies or cosmic information and probably coming up with the blueprints for these. And I feel like when these modern artists and architects are coming down to the same general locations, I feel like if they're tuned into this, they may be receiving these same cosmic downloads. And many times I think it's literally unconscious. There are contests. These artists go down there and they're supposed to get a feel for what fits in with the part, get a sense for what works. And nine times out of ten, the guy who comes up with, you know, these cosmic designs, it fits and it works, and he's getting a commission. So I just feel like there's some type, I'm not sure if it's the spirit of the landscape itself, if this information is possibly coming from the cosmos, or another possibility is most of these are built in the vicinity of ancient burial grounds. So another possibility is the spirits of the deceased, of the ancients. So it's still a little bit up in the air exactly who is, you know, giving these cosmic downloads, but I feel they're coming from somewhere. And I don't feel like, some people ask, you know, is it Masons or is it a secret society? And I would have to say definitely not. I really don't think it is. It's so far beyond that. There's just too many synchronicities that line up where this is some cosmic information that's coming from a cosmic source. And it's just a really incredible scenario, and it's taking place all across the world right now.
Well, that's an interesting suggestion, and I like that, because I think what happens is so many people get caught up in the negative symbolism. They often overlook what's the higher message, the bigger message, you know, the cosmic message, so to speak. And considering the fact that this journey began for you with UFO contact, with the at least the acknowledgement of something outside of your understanding, without knowing the specifics of your experience, of course, but, you know, it does open up a level of consciousness, just like if you were to perhaps do, you know, ayahuasca or some kind of power plant, where it opens up your consciousness. Or even people who have profound meditation experiences You know, I think it, whatever it is for anybody, you know, it opens us up to a level of understanding. And there is certainly something there. And it's nice to know that you're still exploring it and you're still open to the theory of what it may be. And you haven't closed yourself off to the fact that it is this or that, like so many people have. Do you feel that, you know, and this is just an observation that I make as well, is that, you know, this knowledge, whatever they're doing and however they're building these things, this knowledge is very old. It's very ancient. Yeah, sure, some of the secret societies understand it and know it, but it's not just being put together for evil purposes to take over the world, like Pinky and the Brain, you know? we're off to take over the world. But, you know, the harnessing of energy, the harnessing of consciousness, the harnessing of cosmic energy, putting forth into an idea or a platform or a culture or an ideal or whatever it is, you know, I mean, isn't that pretty much what these kinds of places do? They gather energy, they hold energy. And when you go on them, for example, if you're sitting on the Serpent Mound and you're meditating, well, I think you probably are going to get a little bigger boost than if you're sitting down, you know, somewhere else, potentially, you know, because it's designed that way. So what are your thoughts on the fact that, you know, this really is something that has really been understood in higher levels of society and perhaps secretly given down in the sense of symbolism through people being able to just walk through a park and look at it and unconsciously understand it, yes?
Absolutely, and I think that's exactly what they are, is energy accumulators, in particular cosmic energy accumulators, and I think that's why both the ancient mound sites as well as the modern Stargate parks and urban portals we're talking about, I think that's why they're all aligned to the stars and to the heavens, is to draw down these cosmic energies. And, you know, when you go to these places, you can feel it. Like you said, it's different than if you sit at home and meditate in your yard, if you meditate at the Serpent Mound. It's not the same. You can literally feel it. It's palpable, you know. And I think that's the main point of the modern sites. I like to call them cosmic temples, because when you go down there, you literally can connect with the heavens. And I think that's what all of this is about.
Connecting with heaven.
Connecting with the heavens, connecting with the stars, and, you know, gaining that a cosmic consciousness, a cosmic awareness, being able to step outside the box and take the bird's eye view and, you know, look at the world from a new perspective, really. I think that's the gist of it, is be able to gain that new cosmic perception of the world. And when you go to these parks as well as the ancient mound sites, that's what I get out of them, and I believe that's what a lot of people get out of them.
Now, what are you working on now as far as, you know, your uncoverings, your, you know, in your exploration, what are you finding?
I just finished an article actually on the Serpent Mound we're talking about, and about a month ago, I went down there, you know, and did some explorations of the mound itself. And one of the main things I was looking for at the Serpent Mound is there's supposedly in the egg, well, the Serpent Mound, if people aren't familiar with it, the head of the serpent opens up into what looks like a cosmic egg. And there was supposedly an ancient monolith that used to be in the center of this cosmic egg as a lightning attractor. So I went there because legend has it that this monolith was thrown over the edge of the cliff by the head of the serpent. And you go down there and you take the river walk path below, and I actually found the monolith down there. So I started doing a little research about this, and people believe that this monolith may have been a lightning attractor, an energy accumulator like we're talking about. But at the same time, you know, I'm doing this research, a brand new science article came out, Scientific American, talking about lightning, and Russian scientists starting to believe that cosmic rays, may actually be catalysts for lightning. So I'm thinking, you know, if that's the case, not only was the serpent and this monolith able to collect the electromagnetic lightning energy, but also the cosmic energies. So that was the first part of my exploration, is I wanted to go there and, you know, make sure this monolith was there and do a little research on it. And it's a pretty amazing scenario. Now, the second half of my exploration really was, like I said, I go to these ancient sites, and I want to go to the city nearby to see if there's a corresponding park. And sure enough, in Cincinnati, there's a brand new park, and it's called the Friendship Park. And this park was laid out just like the Serpent Mound. I mean, from the tail to the head. When my article comes out, feel free to look at the images, but it's identical. Now, I talk about a lot of the symbolism being unconscious, and I believe that's the same case with this park. They describe it as a friendship bracelet, you know, rather than a serpent. They describe it as a friendship bracelet because it's a friendship park on one aspect, and they also say that the winding path can also be symbolic of DNA. So it's a really cool park, but when you put the comparisons of the Serpent Mound over top of it, it's identical, right down to the head and the cosmic egg. Now, where the head is in the park, in the cosmic egg, there's a giant crystalline tower. And when you put those over top of each other, it would have occupied the exact same spot as the monolith back at the ancient mound. And it's identical symbolism, you know, 1,000 years apart. And surely the lady who put that crystalline tower at the park had no idea about the monolith at the Serpent Mound. I'm pretty sure of it. But you can go all the way through the park and there's the same kind of symbolism keeps showing up. There's, you know, around the Serpent Mound, there's legends of giants and giant bones being discovered in the mounds. Well, when you go to the Serpentine Park, there's a giant earthen mound. It's called the Giant Hands. And it's two giant hands that have two stone spirals that spiral into the palm of the hands, and the signs says something along the lines of sit in the palms of the giant's hands and reconnect with the past. And then you go down just a little further down the path, and there's another monument. It's called the Air Castle. The outside of it is done in like this mirrored-like imaging, if anyone's ever seen Cloud Gate, where it literally looks like it dissolves into the sky. That's why it's called the Air Castle. And it's symbolic, they say, of a celestial city descending from the sky. So this is the kind of symbolism that's showing up in these parks. It's just incredible.
You have a great picture of it on your Facebook page. I'm looking at it right now, actually. Who does these graphics for you? They're fabulous.
I do all those myself, actually. Thank
you. Well, you do a great job. Do you have a place where people can go and look at this? But besides, if they're not friends with you on Facebook, do you have a website or, you know, some place where people can?
This article we're talking about right now, the Serpent Mound article, won't be posted for probably another week. I just got it to my webmaster today, literally. So this article will be posted in about a week. But for any of my other articles, my website is www.chadstemke.com. And I have several articles there. One on Stargate Detroit, one on Stargate St. Louis. I got one of my video lectures on there, and a couple other random radio interviews. You know, quite a bit of stuff for people to check out.
Some good stuff, yeah. It definitely is worth it. So if you're listening right now, go to his website, check him out. If you're on Facebook, add him as a friend. You can follow along with his great work, what he's doing. Now, you talk about something called modern-day myth-making. What is that?
Well, when I'm talking about these cities, whenever we're talking about ancient mythology, we're usually talking about, you know, all these ancient cities, these ancient sacred sites, the gods and the goddesses that surround them. And I feel like all these new parks, I feel like this is the same scenario. This is the building of a modern-day myth. We're building all these Stargate parks and these cosmic temples, and I literally feel like someday, you know, people are going to look back on this as, this was a myth, the emergence of cosmic temples throughout all the cities in the world. And I feel like that's what's happening. And usually, you know, I'd assume most times people don't realize when they're living in the middle of a myth taking place. And I feel like that's what's happening right now. And how cool is it to be able to realize it's happening and become part of it, visit these places, even help to discover them.
Why do you think that when it comes to this particular topic of decoding, that it's a lot of men usually doing this work? No offense. But why does, I think I could name maybe two women on one hand here, you know, who actually pick this up and go along and do the same thing. But why do you think it is that it's a mostly a male type thing? Because that's what it feels like to most people, that it's men who go in and decode these places and find the symbolism and do all of this stuff. I don't think women have been given a fair shot into going into it. That's my own personal opinion, but what are your thoughts on that?
Wow, that's a revelation. I honestly never thought of that, but you're absolutely right, 100%. I can only think of a few myself, and I tell you what, we could really use the help, ladies, if there's anyone out there. because this is all about perception and how we perceive things, and we all know guys and girls don't always perceive things the same way. So if we could team up, and you know, two sets of eyes are always better than one. I never thought about that, Hillary, but that is a great, great point. I don't have a reason for it, but I do ask the ladies for help because we could.
I think it has to do with the two halves of the brain, personally, but I think if you merge those, you end up with something pretty spectacular. I think women, if they get into this kind of research, would be very successful working with men.
Absolutely.
Because
Absolutely.
The way that, just because women are more psychically in tune, intuitively in tune, not that guys aren't, but let's face it, ladies have a little certain finesse when it comes to that stuff, and I think...
Absolutely.
And as a matter of fact, I think Susan Seymour, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her last name correctly. It's H-E-D-K-E. She's done a lot of great work. I follow her on Facebook as well. Maybe I'll ask her to come on the show and ask her that same question, see what she thinks.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's something I believe very strongly that's developing in the mind of human beings, that we're starting to choose to really clue into these particular nuances of symbolism, where we can then decode it in a way that gives us a higher message, that really pulls us into the heart and takes us out of the mind. And I think that's where women come in. They can help that male perspective come more into the heart. And
that's
it's in the heart that we begin to really translate these things and move into bigger places. So we need each other to do it. I think it's something we should be working together on.
I agree.
So, Chad, what do you feel is, you know, do you think people are going to get it? Do you think that... Have we become so disconnected from our past, you know, wandering these ancient, wonderful places left to us by our ancestors? And have we gotten so disconnected, do you think, that this is some way to perhaps jar our memory or to continue the movement through that? What do you think about humanity on a whole when it comes to these places?
I do think they're going to get it. I really do. I mean, just over the few years I've been doing this, I've watched it, you know, in popularity grow immensely. Everything from TV shows to movies to commercials. I mean, the idea of the portal and the Stargate and the just cosmic consciousness in general is becoming a lot more accepted, 100%. When I take people to these parks, they take their friends usually take their friends, and I mean, I've watched it really spread like wildfire through the couple of places I'm looking at. And I think people are going to get it. The bigger question is how are the people going to perceive it? I perceive these as cosmic temples, wonderful places. But then there's some people, like you mentioned, who think these are evil for some reason. But when you go down to these places, that is not the feeling you get. You get just the absolutely incredible feeling of cosmic consciousness connecting with the cosmos, and I think when people actually go down there firsthand, rather than just looking at images and speculating, it's an incredible experience that they want to share with others. I mean, we can even, as far as popularity, even Google has recently came out with a game, pretty much just like what we're talking about, the augmented reality game called Ingress, where they send people out into the cities looking for portals. And it's the biggest game out there right now. So I think it's definitely going to catch on, but where the researchers come in is I want it to catch on in the right way. You know, I don't want them to be perceived wrongly without people actually taking the time to go down there themselves.
Yeah, I think firsthand experience is really important. I know when I first went to visit the 9/11 memorial when it was first up, the experience was not what I expected. And I really didn't have, well, actually, I should take that back. I didn't really have any expectations when I went down, but I was surprised at how I did feel in certain ways because I was able to be on that site when it first, when 9/11 first happened. So I felt the shift and the two different perspectives and the two different ways of how that particular site was vibrating at those two very powerful, potent times. So these places do shift. Now, I just want to comment quickly and get on my soapbox here for a second, because people have to understand that if you want to change the world and you want to move on, you have to move on. I mean, you really have to move on. You can't just say, oh, we want to be all one and we want to have this great, wonderful experience and we all want to, you know, move into a different, better world. And but you know, we're not going to forgive and we're not going to forget the past. And, you know, when you go to these kinds of places and you see the symbolism and you have perhaps read a book or listened to somebody who claims to know what the symbolism is and what it means, and it's all this and it's all that and it's all negative and black and dark, you're really doing yourself a disservice by not allowing yourself to stay open to these things and to go into these places, because no matter what the intention, you still have your own intention and you still are powerful enough to be able to override whatever negative affection is there. And so it's something that people really need to discern themselves. They need to seek it out. They need to let things go and not necessarily just take what other people say as gospel and not make up their own minds, because isn't that what we're used to? You know, we're moving into this new phase. The indigenous that I work with call, we've already moved into the fifth world. We're already here. Some of the great cycles of religions and spirituality have come and gone. We've crossed over to the other side. So now we have to really let go of what's been in the past, and we have to take a look at what's happened and how we're approaching things in our own personal lives and also collectively. And so if we can walk into a place like Friendship Park and make the leap between the old world in the new world, and then really sit with it and ponder what that means for us and the possibilities and infinite potential that that allows us, then we're doing the world a better thing. We're doing ourselves a better thing. Our family is a better thing. Our partners, everybody involved. This is not to say that you can't turn the news on and have an opinion about people like Edward Snowden or what's going on with the NSA leaks, or you can't stay up to date on what's happening in the world. It doesn't mean you have to throw your TV out. It doesn't mean you have to fear every thunderstorm that comes blowing over the top of your house, or every, you know, gritty thought you have, or anything like that. This is really about acceptance, moving into a cosmic perspective, and holding our own when it comes to these, and being able to share that and really just know who we are and know our center, and not let other people push us off it with displaced anger or, you know, other problems that they have. So that's the message that I've gotten out of a lot of these places. I've encouraged people myself to go out and look at these places, experience them, look at the symbolism, because it really is a fascinating topic when you start to pick this apart and look at these places and look at the symbolism and then match the energies to the ancient cultures. You're really rewriting history, don't you think?
Oh, 100%. And very importantly, like you said, is don't listen to everything you hear, you know, even me, don't listen to every researcher. But what you want to do is, when you're looking at these places, the first thing you do is just read the signs on the wall. The second thing is, if you're really interested, find out what the artist or the architect has to say about it. And, I mean, for instance, you just talked about the 9/11 memorial, and some people, right off the bat, Illuminati, it's evil, you know. But what the architect had to say, he said, this is New York's iconic new gateway. And I just look forward to a time when that space will open up to the heavens and I can see the angels come down. Now, to me, that's not evil, you know. I just like to tell people, you don't got to do a lot of research if you're not into it, but just read the signs at the monuments. And if you're interested, see what the artists and architects had to say. And, you know, for the most part, get the story right there.
I was at the 9/11 memorial a couple years ago with Robert Bouval. We had dinner when he was visiting his New York publishers, and we went down to the 9/11 memorial, and he said something very interesting to me, and I think I've shared this story with my listeners before, but I'm going to say it again because it's relevant here. He said that places like this, and he was referring to the 9/11 memorial, create a kind of frequency, resonance kind of feel, an initiation of sort. He says to me, he goes, how do you initiate an entire city when everybody believes something different? Well, right. You build a giant tower in the middle of it with all of the appropriate symbolism, and you let it go to work on people's unconscious minds, superconscious minds, all of that deeper hidden part of people that look up at something, and we know that symbols register deeply into the mind. It goes as far as it can go, pretty much. So when you have a place like this, and you know, you're walking around and you're going to get your coffee and you're going to work and you're buying groceries and you're catching a cab and you're going to a museum and you're doing all this stuff, well, you're right in the middle of it, and he was right. And it took, I was kind of like, okay, let me think about this for a little while, you know, after he said it, but then it made a lot of sense to me. And since then, I have noticed that as these places are placed all over the world in all kinds of major cities, it's just really interesting to see the effects of it if you are, I guess, observing it from a level of consciousness. People's ability to step out of the box and move into a different place. So you, when you're going through this work, and you know you're out here and you're kind of in the field and you're going into these places, for you personally, what has it done for you?
Oh, it's literally changed my life. Literally changed my life. Just the way I perceive the world around me, my friends, the people around me. Everything has really changed by visiting these parks. It's just once you realize that something is what you believed previously to be as insignificant as a park can actually mean the world to you, you start to realize everything's like that. You start to realize that things that weren't as important are more important. You start to perceive reality in general different in a to me in a much better light. I mean, I'm a changed person from the time I started this to now, and I would like to hope to say it in a better way. And I've watched other people. It just changes the way they perceive the world around them, and I think that's a huge, huge personal transformation to be able to, you know, for a part to be able to have on people.
And like, that would be the point, too, right? That would be the point.
Exactly.
I mean, maybe centuries ago we had ritual and ceremony done at these sites, and you know, that was part of the culture and how they connected to the cosmos. Today we might pack a picnic and go sit in Friendship Park and catch a few rays.
Exactly.
And we may not be doing ritual or ceremony necessarily, but at least we're still physically experiencing it, right?
Exactly. And what I always like to point out is, like I mentioned earlier, almost always these modern Stargate parks are located either on top of or right next to the ancient sacred landscapes. So we'll use St. Louis, for instance. You have Cahokia Mounds, and then 5 miles away you have the Gateway Arch and Jefferson National Expansion. So what I always tell people is you can't have a better day than going to get up in the morning, go to the ancient sacred landscape, climb the pyramids, you know, connect with the past, connect with the ancient cultures, and then partway through the day, go to the modern Stargate Park, go to the Gateway Arch, connect with the Rainbow Bridge symbolism. And in the basement of the Gateway Arch, Thomas Jefferson has a sculpture standing in a space-time continuum. So I tell them to go to the ancient sites, go to the modern sites, be in the past, be in the moment, and sometimes you're going to catch glimpses of the future. It's like a true gateway experience you can have in a single day if you want.
I was recently down in Florida back in February of this year, and I was visiting the Crystal River Mounds, and we were doing a variety of different things down there, and it was quite fascinating. We actually had the whole park to ourselves, and we were able to spend a lot of time on those mounds, a lot of time, and we were able to actually do a lot of very special work down there. And once you start realizing when you connect to these places, you would be astonished at how many there really are. I mean, I could not believe how many mounds there really are all the way through the Gulf Coast of Florida, all the way down quite far, even past in the Sarasota area if you go down that far. And then, you know, when you start to really look at what's here in the United States, you have a whole bunch of mounds, very, very large mound area down towards Louisiana. Have you ever been down there?
I haven't been down there, but yeah, there's some monsters down there, absolutely. Yeah, there are so many of them, and the majority of the public has all but forgotten about these ancient sacred landscapes there.
Well, it looks like we might have lost Chad. We're going to get him back on the line for you guys, having some technical difficulties tonight. But what I found interesting and what I'd like to keep talking about, well, if we try to get him back on here, is the fact that these sites are so thoroughly...
Back.
You're back. Yay! Well,
I'm
I wanted
back.
To... We know what happens, you know? It's live radio. What can you expect? So anyway, you know what I was...
I didn't even know I was gone.
Did you keep talking the whole time?
Yep.
Yeah. So we missed all that. So we got to start back. We were talking about Louisiana, the mounds, and how these sites are really pertinent throughout the United States that we really aren't aware of. And then we lost you, and that's where, I don't know, I'm assuming the listeners lost you at the same point. That's where I lost you anyway. My question really going into that specifically is, I mean, why do we not know what's in our own backyard?
Well, that's the big question, and we should. I think a lot of it goes back to archaeology in the late 1800s and early 1900s, and, you know, just they didn't make it as important of a thing as it should have been to us. And some of the bones went to the Smithsonian, and that was the end of them. And other times, farmers just literally, when they were moving throughout the country, they just dug up the mounds, seeing if anything was in them, but they just plowed them down to make room for the fields. To them, it really, other than looking for treasure, which there was very little treasure in any of these mounds, they weren't important to the people in the 1800s. So we lost a lot of information we wish we would have now, and a majority of the mounds. That said, there's still a lot of them, and like you said, most people don't recognize them. And that's one of the things I really want to help to change, because they are sacred landscapes. You know, they're special places. And the ones that are remaining, I feel like they deserve some attention, definitely.
The whole Ohio area is very interesting. Now, from what I understand, there used to be a rather large complex in that particular part of the United States that had to do with Native Americans settling. And this was really quite a big complex, and it went through Ohio and I believe into another state as well, if I'm recalling it correctly. But have you found that you have also made your way to those particular areas? The name escapes me at the moment, but it's one of those large, almost like a temple-like layout complex of sites.
Newark Earthworks, possibly.
Yeah, that's it. Yep, thank you.
Yep, actually, on the same trip I went to the Serpent Mound, I visited the Newark Earthworks also. And like you said, they are enormous. Literally, well, there's a octagon and a circle, and that's now turned into a golf course. And then, I believe it's 7 miles away, the octagon and circle was connected via a 7-mile-long mound pathway to another circle, which was called the Great Circle. And this is the largest earthen circle in the world, just enormous. It's so big you can hardly see the other side of the circle. And in the middle of the earthen circle, there was a Birdman mound. And supposedly where this Birdman Mound was is where the shaman would do their ceremonies, connecting with the heavens. The Birdman was the messenger. So, and, I mean, this mound site was so big, the modern day city, I mean, they got a whole city built within where this mound site was. So, the sacred geometry and the stuff these ancient cultures were able to use is really, really mind-bending to be able to build these sacred architecture structures 7-8 miles apart, all with perfect alignment. Not having modern-day tools is, to me, it's still somewhat of a mystery. When you go to these places, you have trouble comprehending how they could actually do these measurements and whatnot, but they did it. Mm-hmm. And it's an absolutely amazing part of the Ohio Valley. And anyone that goes to visit the Serpent Mound, I would highly recommend make the trip. It's about 2 hours north to the Newark Earthworks. And it's just like all these other sites, it's cosmically aligned to all kinds of different lunar and solstices. It's all about aligning these sites to the heavens. Every single site I went to on this last trip, these sacred sites are all aligned to the stars.
Well, if we were to actually make the effort to do all of this, we would certainly have to rewrite a few textbooks in this country. We would certainly have to replan how history is taught in the lower grades, that's for sure. That would mean quite a bit of work for some people.
Yeah,
Chad,
yeah.
When we were talking about this, you know, coming together on the air and doing a show, you had said you wanted to talk about, you know, some things. You had kind of put it out there. And one of the things you mentioned was giants, and that kind of caught my eye. And I'm like, oh, I got to ask him about that. Now, what did you mean by talking about giants?
Well, when I'm doing all this research in the Ohio Valley, and I'm looking at what are called the antiquarian magazines, which were in the late 1800s. Each town had their own little magazine each year, just talking about the discoveries and the weather and the farms, just little bit of everything. And a lot of these magazines from the 1800s, when they were digging up these mounds, they have reports of bones of giants being discovered. Bones of people from anywhere from 7 to, in some cases, 12 foot tall being discovered in the mounds all throughout the Midwest. I mean, some places as far out as Utah and California, but the majority are all throughout the Ohio Valley in the Midwest. So it's hard to comprehend, and the problem is that there are no bones left. There's no place you can go to see these giant bones that were discovered. And in pretty much every instance in these magazines, when they make the discovery of these giant bones, they'd be sent to the Smithsonian Institute, and, well, they would disappear. None of these giant bones were ever to be seen again. But hundreds and hundreds of magazines and newspapers, I mean, the New York newspapers, Boston, Detroit, they all reported on these bones of giants being discovered like it was common stance at the time. It wasn't even unusual. And now, besides just researchers, but the public, this has all been but forgotten. And these, when you look at the legends of the Native Americans in these same general vicinities, pretty much every tribe had the legends of the giants. So I'm really starting to dig into them, but there seems to be some connection with this whole Ohio Valley, the mounds, the legends of the giants, and the other aspect of my research that comes into it is the Michigan copper mystery. So whenever these giants are found, more times than not, they were wearing copper armor, copper implements, sometimes had little copper treasures with them, but they always seem to be connected with the copper. And we have a mystery in Michigan. We're missing supposedly a half million pounds of copper from the Upper Peninsula. So it's one of my side projects right now is trying to figure out the connection between the giants and the copper mystery, because it seems like there's a definite connection. Even up there where they actually, all the ancient copper mining was done, and this was carbon dated 5,000 years ago, on the cliff rocks by the copper mines, there's actually just giant handprint petroglyphs. They look giant hands. And they also found what are called hammer stones all around there, which were the giant axe heads that were made out of stone. But some of these hammer stones weighed 30 and 40 pounds. There's no way even a big guy could be swinging a 40-pound hammer all day long. It's just, you know, it's pretty uncomprehendable. So there's all kinds of these little clues connecting the Giants, the Topper, and then most of them were discovered in the Ohio Valley. So I'm still piecing it together a little bit, but every legend, you know, has legends of these Giants in the Ohio Valley.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
One other aspect of it is, and I'm still working on this, this sounds a little strange, but when you go back to the ancient texts, say the Bible, Book of Enoch, Book of Giants, they talk about the Nephilim and how they were to be punished on the earth. They, when they died, their souls couldn't go to heaven. They had to reincarnate here on earth. And they say they would try to reincarnate, you know, into humans. Or just reincarnate the information, what have you. Well, what's weird is where a lot of these modern parks are popping up, these Stargate parks, by the ancient mounds, many times the ancient mounds that these giant bones were found in. Well, I keep talking about it, I've been talking about it for years, you know, this information, is this cosmic information, is coming from somewhere. Not sure where, not sure if it's the cosmos, the landscape itself, but there's this cosmic information coming from somewhere. So, the more I look into this, the more I find that by these Stargate parks, there seem to have been remains of giants, and I've also speculated coming, you know, from the deceased or whatnot. So now I'm kind of working on, could it possibly be the spirits of the deceased giants that are feeding this information to the artists and architects? And, you know, this is obviously pure speculation on my part, but, you know, the clues are there. You know, the clues are there, so that's something I'm kind of trying to follow up on.
Well, that's very interesting. And so when will you be updating us on your findings with this? Will you be posting it on your website, or are you open to people contacting you to help give you more information if somebody has it, and how would they do that?
I am always, always open for more information, open for help, and just communication in general. My email address is info@chadstemke.com. Please email me any info, or if you just want to talk about something in general. And, say I got the Serpent Mount article. I just got that to my webmaster. That should be out in about a week or so. And the 6,000-word article, 30 pages, so it's like a half a book that I just put into an article and then give away for free. So I hope everybody enjoys it if you can make
it to the end. I have something to say about that. Okay, first of all, you should put it in a book, and you should do what the rest of them do, and you should charge for it, because that's what everybody does basically at this point. Because what you're doing is valuable. Have you found that you find what I found interesting when you were talking about the giants and how you feel like the spirit of them is coming through, that there's some kind of communication there. Have you had channeling experiences yourself since you've been spending so much time on these sites, doing this work, looking into it synchronistically, following these kind of, you know, dots through the cosmic trail, so to speak? Have you found that you find yourself connecting to that and coming through? And I'm going to say it. Have you channeled things?
I don't know if I'd use the word channel, but I would say that 90% of my information, like initially, it comes from the first or second time I go to these parks. Initially, I read the signs, and then it's like, the best way I can describe it is you get unusual thoughts. Like, you think of things you wouldn't have thought of. That's the best way I can put it. You get unusual thoughts that, you know, you get information. I guess maybe you could call it channeling. I read the signs, and then just weird thoughts come to you. Tons of synchronicity. Like, the main thing that happens is synchronicity after synchronicity. And, you know, once the fifth or sixth synchronicity happens in an hour or so, you start to realize it's probably more than a synchronicity. It's most likely a message of some sort. And that's kind of just what happens. You just go down there open-hearted, go down there, enjoy yourself. And when the synchronicities start falling into place to the point your mouth is just kind of hanging open, you know you're onto something, or something's there kind of guiding you, so to speak. That's kind of I guess you could call it channeling in a way. I've never really called it that, but I definitely feel there's something guiding your way when you go there open-minded I know where, and, you know, you're looking for that. But at the same time, like, say, Stargate Detroit, for instance, it's in the heart of downtown Detroit, Hart Plaza. And 1 million people a year walk through this park. I mean, literally, they walk. There's a Stargate Monument. 1 million people walk under the Stargate Monument, over the pyramid, underneath the Horus and Sun Fountain. And, you know, out of that 1 million people, probably 1,000 of them recognize the symbolism, you know. So what I'd like to do is, if 1 million people go to these places, if we can just get a percentage of those people to start being aware of where they're at and the symbolism there. And the, you know, just imagine the effect if we could get a percentage of that 1 million people to connect with each other, with the park, and start perceiving everybody there in a new light, in a better light. It, you know, and if we can do that in each city, we could have a monumental effect, I think.
Well, you are channeling. And that's what I call it. Getting back to that. I know, and that's a woman's input. I think that's where this, I think, but we go back to that original comment back there that, you know, the woman insight into this, you definitely are channeling. I mean, when we go to these sites, when I work with the Shimas, I mean, that's what they do. They'll sit on top of the mound and they'll channel whatever comes through, and somebody better be paying attention or writing it down or recording it, because what comes through is exactly what you described. And if you don't already, Chad, you need to bring a tape recorder, a piece of paper, and a pen, and you need to write down what's coming through when you go to these places, because you are connecting directly to Source. And whatever is illuminating or has illuminated or continues to illuminate these places absolutely is calling to you and working through you in this way. And it's part of what your destiny is and what you're supposed to be doing. And so it is for everybody who starts to tap into this. It really is part of some kind of evolution in consciousness that we're all a part of, and it happens for everybody. And nobody is special in that sense, and everybody is equal. And it's really a wonderful thing that you're doing for yourself. Now, I know you're married. Now how does your wife feel about all this? Does she join you on these excursions?
Yeah, she goes on me with me on some of them. That said, I got a couple of dogs and a cat, so somebody has to watch the animals when I'm gone for too long. But yeah, she's very, very, I couldn't ask for a more supportive wife. I'm very lucky, you know. You know how it is, research, and you're half there and half not there sometimes. So she's very supportive, and I couldn't appreciate it enough.
Good. And now what does she feel about what you're finding? I mean, does she get excited about it the same way you do?
Oh, yeah, she gets excited about it, but at the same time, she probably gets tired of hearing about it constantly. Oh. Yeah, because you know how it is when we get excited as we're researching, you just got to tell somebody, and she's the only person there, so she hears it constantly.
She would make a nice feminine input into some of the things, too, so you should hire her on as part of your partnership there with finding that balance between the male and the female energies, which would be great. And you have kids too, yes? Do you have kids or no?
No, we don't. No.
Oh, well, maybe I'm tapping into something psychically. You're going to down the road.
I was just
going to
say that's too weird. Because we are trying.
Okay, well, you know, that's what I do. So anyway, moving on.
I know.
So now we have a couple minutes left in the show, and I'd like to give you an opportunity to use the last few minutes that we have to really push your own message out there and what you feel is humanity's destiny at this point. Where are we headed? It's a big thing to ask of you, but I think you're going to be able to channel it right through.
Well, obviously, things are, for lack of a better word, really strange, really weird right now in the world. But personally, I think it's, you know, we go through the cycles, through the ups, through the downs, and I know a lot of people right now are saying how tough it is on them, what hard times they're going through, and, well, I couldn't agree more, really. I'm going through those same hard times right now. But this is all a learning experience, and I think everything we're going through is all about learning for what's tomorrow. And I think that's a big point of it. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I like to talk about these parks and these sacred landscapes, is because in this field, you can talk about a lot of different stuff, but there's not too many things where you can talk about and have people go out there and experience it firsthand themselves and make a change in themselves. And that's why I really, really want to push people to go out to these new modern urban parks or the sacred mound sites, because these places can have a change on you. And when it has a change on you, it has a change on everybody else around you. And that's what's really important, I think. So if, you know, you get an opportunity next time you're in one of these cities and you're stuck in your hotel room, go down to the nearest park and see what you can personally dig up. You might be
take some
really
pictures
surprised.
And take a pen and a notebook and channel it through. Thanks, Chad, for being here. You've been wonderful, and best of luck
and
with
take
everything.
A girl with you too.
Right, see? Cosmic dating. It's the new thing, I swear. All right, Chad, thanks so much for being here. Everybody, you are we're out of time. That's the way it goes. Till next time, namaste, everyone. Good night.
Psychic radio, holistic radio, spiritual radio. This is AchieveRadio.com. You're listening to AchieveRadio.com. A new drummer. For a new awakening. The divine name is a universal sound that, when intoned, has the ability to bring harmony and healing to ourselves and the planet. Discover the power of this lost sound through the new book, The Divine Name, by Healing Sounds pioneer Jonathan Goldman. With a foreword by Greg Braden and a free instructional CD, this groundbreaking book can take us to a new level of evolution. Go to www.thedivinename.com and discover the divine name.